Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Maybe I sound arrogant when I say this, but this is probably the most fun talk radio in this type of vein or genre, if you will. In fact, that's the main point. I'm trying to sit here. Yeah, we're trying to talk to great guests who have incredible information, who've had sometimes very horrible things happen to them. But that's not necessarily my main goal, per se. Actually, my main goal is just to make sure that those guests enjoy themselves, because I know how hard it is trying to always talk about exposing scumbaggery and the terrible things that go. It's a great weight on your mind. It really is. There's quite a horrible chain of events that happen when you start to stand up for truth and justice. You wind up having problems with almost everything that you look at, including your relationships with your friends, your families, your significant others, and what have you. And just to have somewhere to go where you can have some fun, enjoy a little bit of reprieve in a comfortable environment where you won't be judged, that's basically the whole point of the show, in a nutshell. So I hope you're enjoying yourself, Joe. If not, I'm failing in my duty.
No, I am enjoying myself, and I did not know how much I needed to hear some good old Bob Marley. that was a great intro there. Something I need to upload for some relaxation during the break. I mean, man, that was well needed.
In fact, it wasn't Bob Marley. It's,
No?
No, it's a friend of mine, Tingiala Ness. He's a reggae musician from here in New Zealand. He's from the island of Niue, I believe. Used to be a Polynesian panther back in the day in the 60s here.
I feel about a foot tall right now. No, it's been a while, I guess, since I've listened to music. And that was very, it sounded like Bob Marley. That was great.
It sounds great like music. Rasta.
Yeah. Mm. Nice. The message was good. I love it.
Oh, yeah. That was the theme song for the show for the first, 2 years going in, because that's what we really wanted to encourage everybody to do, have a bit of unity and all for one, one for all. That kind of message, I think, was just very much necessary in the truth movement, because it gives you a little bit of hope, a little bit of, I don't know, warm, fuzzy feelings, I think. Not everything's that bad.
Yeah, and it does. Especially, you were talking about the judges stealing kids, and I came across this story earlier today, and this is what really gets me. When you talk about the children, and we were talking about abortion there, after Sandy Hook, we have Obama saying we need to take executive actions to if we can save one children, yet the man gives, or was scheduled to give, a keynote address at Planned Parenthood, ended up speaking at this Planned Parenthood event, saying, "God bless you, Planned Parenthood." The same people who have killed 51% of all African-American babies who were supposed to be born in the U.S. and countless other unborn children. These are the
organization that used to be known as the American Eugenics Society until after World War II, when eugenics developed a bad name in America.
Right. They need to be rebranded as women's health rights. But reading the story here, there was a couple who had a Russian couple in the United States, or their children taken by the Child Protective Services for getting a second opinion from a different hospital than when they first went to. And the first hospital wanted to do a heart surgery on their baby. And this mother, Anna, and her husband, Alex, took their son, Sammy, to a second hospital to get a second opinion. After a doctor or a police officer came to their door the first day, saw the baby was healthy and fine, and even the couple even allowed a doctor to look at the baby. When the police officer came, apparently he brought a doctor. They signed off, said everything was okay. The next day, the cops show up and take the baby. So yes, these stories, how could you give up your baby, first of all? And I don't know if you saw this MSNBC host, Melissa Harris Perry, her commercial for MSNBC saying, parents need to stop thinking of their children as their own.
Oh, they need to think of them as the property of the state.
Yes. I mean, how disturbing is that to parents? I'm not a parent yet, and I hope to be one day soon. But I cannot imagine.
But you're a son. But you're a son. And just imagine if the government owned you.
Well, they'd have their hands full right now. But yes, I could not. I just don't understand. There's no outrage in the streets. People will not go out and you know, show their outrage until their favorite TV shows get cut off. Until they can't go to the grocery store and buy whatever foods they want to buy. Or beer or whatever it is that tickles their fancy. They will not get up and do something until they are personally affected. And sadly, in many cases, when that happens, they are being thrown in the camps. They are being summarily executed. And that is history, not my opinion.
I do think so. And what occurs to me is that there are a significant number of reports from parents who are having their children taken for no good reason. It happens in New Zealand more often than I'd like to even really go into. And the child protection workers, which is an ironic title, I know, actually have more authority than the police. There was one woman here who had her 10-year-old silver medalist taekwondo girl getting taken away by these child protection workers and screaming, and the cops actually sitting there actually in tears because they knew that they couldn't stop them.
That's tyranny. And when, I don't know what the rates are over here, I think, over here in the U.S., I think the child is 5 times more likely to be abused after being taken by these Children Protective Service people also.
Similar statistics here.
Yeah, it's amazing. I would never give my child up freely. You're going to have to take my child from me, literally, from my cold, dead hands.
But, well, see, and this is the other thing as well, is that you actually have to put your life on the line if you want to stop somebody who's a criminal.
Yeah, and that's a concept long lost here. Just like freedom, individualness, self, the sufficiency. Those are no longer definitions that mean anything to the American people, nor to the people of the world. They would rather be able to depend on their government than have to lift their eyelids, you know, at the crack of dawn to take care of their farm. And some people have been pushed that way, but most people have accepted that way because it's been offered. And so often, we as humans want to be comfortable, so we are, or we'll tolerate, basically, whatever is given to us rather than going the extra mile ourselves and trying to make it better.
Is everybody operating under an illusion that they can live forever?
I think a lot of people feel that they are, to a certain degree, invisible, or they can get, you know, tomorrow won't be too late, or, you know, they can make their situation better whenever they need to, when that is not the case. The procrastination. And you were joking about being a procrastinator. I'm a procrastinator too, but not when it comes to my life, liberty, freedom, ability to live. Well, I cannot tolerate that. You know, I've worked all my life, and I know that if I lose a job, I need to be out there as hard as I can trying to get another job because that is my livelihood. But anymore, the government here, at least, they're advertising food stamps on TV saying it is a economic stimulus and you're doing your country a disservice by not getting food stamps if you're eligible. I mean, it's just everything is backwards. Everything that was wrong before is now right. Everything that was right is now wrong. And they've been able to manipulate society in a way and the society's norms and what's acceptable and turn those around. And that is directly through brainwashing and this little thing we call the TV. I think the TV and the chemicals that are in the water and the air that they have been inundating us with across the globe have pretty much lobotomized the people into little worker drones. And they will do what they're told when they're told. And when the government says jump, they will ask how high. And that's as simple as that.
You have this way of looking at it, Joe, if you don't mind me saying, that really sells the seriousness of the situation. Yet, I don't think everybody gets it, including myself, because maybe they haven't been in that situation before. Maybe they haven't been on food stamps. Maybe they haven't had a child taken by the child pedophile service and been in court for 6 years dealing with corrupt cops, corrupt judges, corrupt prosecutors, corrupt family service officers, and so on and so forth, going through the rigmarole and the roundabouts. And we were just talking about it this morning with my girlfriend. She's trying to go for a form of government benefit right now, and so far she's had to go there and come back and get different pieces of information, something like 6 times, being on hold for goodness how many other hours on top of that. And I said to her, and it's the same thing with the way all the rest of the government criminal organizations work, they just get you to give up by giving you so many obstacles and so many hoops to jump through that you eventually can't take it anymore. You spend the rest of your life very, very sad.
Yep. And they do that, and they have the resources to do it. They have your own tax dollars that they take from you every single year. And they have the ability to stop you. And just imagine, you know, you have, if you're lucky, $5,000 to $10,000 in a savings account, you know, plus a car and a job and a shelter. Now you have the government coming after you with its unlimited amount of resources. They can come after you in every way for as long as they want. There is no worry about them overdrawing their account on lawyers coming after you because it's your money they're taking in the first place. There's no worry about, you know, are we taking this too far? And I use an example of the one couple that was bought property, built a house, was ready to move in, and all of a sudden the EPA and the government came in and said, no, we decided this is a wetland, and now every day that you reside on this property, you're going to have to pay a $200,000 fine. This after them being victorious in the court of law against the government. So yes, they can continue to bring their whole army against you. Well, you stand there hopeless, and there's not much you can do about it. And putting your life on the line anymore, people, that is something that people need to understand. You only do in cases of, you know, when you're saving your own life or those around you. But we don't even see that anymore.
Imagine if during the American Revolution, the American revolutionaries also had to pay for the British Army. You know, like we have to pay about 20% of the British Army.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happens when you go to war against the government now in a court place or something like that, is they take a tithe of any of this money that you're making just being an ordinary, decent person, and then they use it to commit scumbaggery against you.
That's exactly right. They use your own resources against you. This whole surveillance state. Now, we got the smart meters you were talking about. Your local electrical companies were being bought out by other agencies, bigger agencies.
Oh, well, they're selling the power companies to private investors. So, so what they do here in New Zealand when they sell an asset, they've done it many times before, is they say, oh, we'll only allow New Zealanders to buy them. So, sure enough, only New Zealanders buy the share. And then massive World Bank or IMF-affiliated companies set up shop in the country and pay people 2 to 3 times what the shares are worth, and then they wind up owning them and then letting all the infrastructure go dead and charge up the prices for everybody, and then eventually leave the country holding all that profit and leave everybody else holding the bag to die.
Yeah, that's what they do here. They'll buy, for say, a highway in a certain state and put up a Spanish company, we'll say. In our case, Pennsylvania, where we live, bought a highway and put up toll roads. And now a Spanish company, an international company, has the ability to collect tolls on American people driving throughout America. Now, what sense does that make when a free person in America, allegedly, under the Constitution, has to pay basically their extortion fee to a Spanish company in order to move freely throughout the country? Or it wouldn't be freely, I guess, just to move about the country. Yeah, the infrastructure here is, are being sold. The ones that aren't being sold are being left for dead. The sinkholes across the region are ripping apart different states. They're swallowing people whole now. We see Fukushima, the destruction. Fish are washing up across the shores of the world, dead. These weird weather patterns we're having. It's all of this big government and not taking care of their responsibilities, not taking care of things that are already paid for through the tax dollars of the American people. And you're right, the IMF, the World Bank, they are sucking up as much as they can. The United Nations, they are the new one world government headquarters. So everything will be going through them, and they will continue to inflate and deflate countries' currencies in order to be able to buy up these assets at pennies on the dollar.
And they will also be able to regulate all of our nation's legislation from afar without even an election being held. Isn't that brilliant?
Yeah. And see, they've given us the illusion that we've had a say in our politics in the last 40, 50 years. But that's been the illusion because they've already been doing that secretly. But now they can come out in the open and admit as much. And still, yeah. No outcry.
No outcry. Oh, they've already been winning one over of us for 40 years. I've grown up with it. I guess I'm used to it. Ah, well, it's not worth overthrowing. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
To fly to New Zealand by plane from New York City, it takes 22 hours.
So welcome back.
Twin Cities, 19. I mean, I fly...
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from a long freaking way away from America, New Zealand. My very special guest, Joe Hagman, is also now being joined by another guest, Baron Hines. Baron, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on. It is Baron.
Baron.
Hey.
All right. So what's going on, Baron?
You know, I was listening while I was setting up, and you know, some of the same sentiment that Doug was expressing, I kind of feel myself. The it's reached a point where people have to really start to pay attention, but you know, you're not going to get most people to pay attention to what's going on because they don't understand why they even need to pay attention, and the ramifications from that are spidering into everything more so now.
Mm. Well, see, I always find that that's a real dangerous mentality to think that most people won't wake up, because the lesson of history is that most people don't freaking matter at all. You know, it's only a very small minority of people that wind up making all the change for good or for ill. A lot of people are saying, you know, well, we need the masses to awakening, a mass awakening, so on and so forth. That would be the first time, like, ever in human history that that's happened, and it would be cool, sure. But my perspective is we only need a couple of percent, tops.
I agree. I agree totally. And you're right about that, but the, you know, now I think that it can be fairly said that even, you know, even at the height of Rome or predating that, you know, civilizations in Africa, things like that, when they were collapsing, there was not necessarily a full understanding of what was going on. And you know, it's the boiling frog syndrome where people don't realize until it's too late and it's, you know, washed up at their feet and they can't really do much about it but be angry and do unproductive things. And you if you take that and apply it to what's happened now, you know, that's in such an extreme position. You know, just the sheer numbers of having 7 billion people on the planet and this interconnectedness that we have, you know, beyond just-in-time shipping, but even the real-time information sharing, that's created these huge perversions in society that are still, you know, every day we're working out kind of the new normal and how society is supposed to proceed around that. And, you know, at the same time that's accelerating the technology and everything else, the, you know, the on-demand nature of it versus the, you know, the closing vice of this new world order, you know, that's produce these really crazy, perversions. You know,
well, that's it. It's a bit of a double-edged sword, though, isn't it, with technology? In my opinion, it doesn't matter how large you make a double-edged sword, it's still a double-edged sword. What do you reckon, Joe?
No, that's exactly right. And sadly, these new world order criminals, as we'll call them, you have this technology. I mean, I was looking at a story right here about this report from 2011, or they just came out with this report from 2011 about the starvation in North Africa. Over 260,000 people starved in this famine in 2011, and they said, you know, it could have been stopped. These people have the wealth to not only feed and clothe, but house everybody in the world comfortably if it wasn't for their own greed. And they use this technology that could be used to help just as many people. Instead, they use it to oppress. And if only we had good people in our world running our governments, if we had a new world order for good, things would be a lot different. But obviously, we don't.
Well, they see, there's the paradox. Can I just say that this is the paradox of it? Good people don't want to run countries because it means you have to have control over everybody else. It's kind of the reason why bad people don't get assassinated either, because only good people would want to see those bad people get assassinated, and good people don't assassinate people. I mean, you can't have a government without it eventually going into some form of tyranny, can you? Without people in control, people feel lost. Yet the irony is, it's only when people are in control that you can be taken over and enslaved.
That's right. And the people who are in control are more ruthless, and they are they will go that extra mile. Where the people who are sitting on the sidelines waiting for one side to win, that's all they're doing is just sitting and waiting. Well, the people who are out doing evil are doing it to the fullest extent that they are capable of doing it.
Well, see, my bro Barry, he was telling me about this this test that was done with a bunch of college students. I think it might have been in Yale or something like that. And they made these students, you know, just split them up. You know, you're a guard, you're a prisoner, you're a guard, you're a prisoner. You know, and they got them to just mock run a prison. And I think they had to stop the experiment after only a couple of days because the prisoners having no power of any kind and the prison guards having all the power, they started abusing and taking advantage of these other people and insulting them, beating them up, and stuff like that. And it was just a test. You can imagine what it's like in the real world. And that's what happens when you give people control over other people that can't be kept in check. You know, if I'm armed and you're not, I'm the one in control, so it's completely up to me. And who knows? I could just suddenly, hey, there's nothing you can do about it. I might as well just crack you over the head with this bat, and I might as well just taser you. Might as well just mace you in the face. And your child too. Baron, what do you reckon about all? Baron, sorry, what do you reckon about this?
Personally, I think you're exactly right. You know, the level of sociopathy is clearly increasing around the world to complement the psychopaths that are, you know, pulling the strings. And you know, I think that matches perfectly with what I was saying earlier, that you know, it's just reached this. You know, a lot of people that are in this type of media, and you know, the people that follow it, this discussion is kind of had all the time, but it's had in a vacuum. And you know, we talk about it in a future sense of what we'd like to see, but we forget the mindset that while we're doing this, we have to be creating that every day, and we have to be, you know, continuously working towards that, and people kind of lose sight of that. And you know, what I think is that there's such a what has to happen is that this few percent of people, the independents in the middle, so to speak, that are, you know, on the edge of the matrix, they really have to start to see it for themselves. And by nature, the only thing that's going to make that happen is for more and more things that are negative to happen in their life. And you know, unless you get by chance the random, you know, chance that person stumbles across something, you know, one of these websites out there, but because of that, because things are continuously basically in a state of decay, you know, no matter what you're talking about, whether it's the war situation or the economy, you know, and any other thing that's on that list, it's, you know, we're reaching these larger and larger events that are more shocking to people's conscience. And that's kind of the natural cycle of things, you know. So you know, people are, I think that they lose sight of that in preparing for that and talking about, you know, like I said, the kind of society we'd like to see going forward and ending all this criminality.
Joe, what do you think about that? Because I was just As you were talking, Brian, I was thinking about the Boston bombings and comparing the scale of, say, the 9/11 attacks and the Boston bombings, and then comparing the reactions. You know, has there been a similar sized reaction to the Boston bombings as there was 9/11? No frickin' way. I remember 9/11. It shocked and appalled and freaked out everybody at the time. And there were these massive concerts of United We Stand, and they had these 1,800-page documents, legislation like the Patriot Act being passed within minutes, and multiple countries being invaded. Nowhere near that kind of reaction now. Have people just kind of gotten used to it? They don't really get affected too much by terrorism anymore.
Well, I think what it is that the government doesn't need to put on huge examples like they did on 9/11. They have already persuaded the masses through their propaganda and their terror. Both are interrelated. Major, two of the most important parts of the totalitarian regime are propaganda and terror. So now they can use their little bit of terror and a lot of propaganda to sway the public, where before they needed a lot of both, you know.
In order to make a crowd be scared and run away and stop protesting, they previously needed a car bomb, and now all they need is a cherry bomb going off of the side of the road, and it produces the same result, because everybody remembers the car bomb and they think it's a car bomb again whenever a cherry bomb goes off.
He's totally right, though. The relativity of it, the bar is not as high to have that same kind of effect anymore, you know. And even at that, you know, so I forget where I heard it, but somebody was saying that America basically has PTSD, you know, almost as a whole, maybe not even people's whole consciousness, but the tone of the discussion that's framed by the media in terms of kind of that the crap narrative that is acceptable, so to speak, you know, to discuss in private, you know, in a polite conversation, you know, outside of this new world order paradigm. You know, so it's gotten to the point to where between the bar being lower and also, you know, you have, you know, the people that that's designed to reach, you know, they're also caring less about liberties going out the window. And on top of that, you know, most people are so distracted by technology that they're looking down at their phone and not caring. You know, it's about, you know, the NBA playoffs that are going on right now and sports and everything else. You know, it's also kind of largely a test. You know, I think a lot of these things that are happening are kind of a test run as far as what the power structure could even get away with. You know, what really ticks people off, what makes people pay attention. You know, and I think it's showing you that you know, really, it's the conversation is being driven to a point where, you know, I don't know if you agree with me, Doug, but the there's so many things that come out.
It's Joe,
like,
by the way, not Doug.
Joe, I don't know where I got Doug from. Sometimes
that's my co-host. Yeah.
Okay, there we go. I was conflating two different things, but there's so many things that come out that look like conspiracies. And personally, on the other side of the line, that we have pretty good evidence are conspiracies or are being lied about, if you want to put it that way. That every time something happens now, because the issue is so multi-layered, and there's also such, you know, that it's being stuffed into smaller and smaller windows, say on the mainstream news, the whole debate is going out the window, and now there's this bright line being drawn between, well, are you a mainstream TV lover or are you a conspiracy theorist? And they're not shying away from the term conspiracy theorist now.
They're playing us off against one another so that the conspiracy theorists hate the slaves and the slaves hate the conspiracy
theorists. Right, but you know, it's even worse than that. The middle population of the slaves, so to speak, that could wake up and start to see the other side of it, they're playing the slaves off against them too, so, you know, they're ostracized from both sides in a way, and then trying to wade through the sea of BS that's out there, it just wastes even more time for people catching up.
Yeah, well, imagine you were on the front lines of say, World War One or something like that, and you've got a specific uniform on, you know, you think you're on one particular side, and then all of a sudden the other side starts charging at you, and they've got like 10 different uniforms on, and you're told that about half of them are your allies and half of them are your enemies, but they won't tell you which uniform's which. Who are you going to shoot at?
Right.
You know, it just creates this massive confusion, and then eventually whatever gets through and winds up killing everybody on your line of defense. And I think this is how you work. You distract and you use deception against people, and you put the wrong enemies in front of them so that the real enemy can make it through unscathed and cut your throat.
And all that stuff has really already happened, and it's almost now, this is my personal opinion, I think it's to a fever pitch where there's so many layers of disinformation being cut away from different things that you have these more and more extreme things happening at the same time to make up for that. And not only is it painting things into a corner, but it's also, you know, foreshadowing the bigger things to come. And just by nature, whether those bigger things were going to happen either way or because it's out of necessity of the situation, the bigger things are coming. And I think that the Boston bombing, obviously, it was a test run for this martial law situation. You know, it was a huge exercise. You know, not only local and federal, but you know, military was watching in, and you know, they were probably testing out all kinds of police state technology. You know, it was a big party in a way.
But I find it quite funny. The marathon was a lot of huge exercises.
Yeah, you know, but
yeah. The Boston Globe even put that out on their Twitter page. It says, officials, there will be a controlled explosion opposite the library within 1 minute as part of their bomb squad activities. And this I'm reading from their Twitter feed page I bookmarked.
No, before you continue, I actually talked to the guy on Twitter responded to me, one of the senior editors over there, and that was actually afterwards. They put that out after the situation supposedly happened. The two explosions, but the information on the drill was coming from the one track coach who was actually participating in the marathon. He was the one that brought the information out about the bomb sniffing dogs and hearing the words that this is a drill over the loudspeaker. You know, but so what happened? He actually responded to my account on Twitter saying that the Boston Globe did not report that. You know,
okay.
You know, specifically that, and what's happening is two people are conflating two different things together. And, just to clean up the conversation, you know, so that you don't have the same thing happen, you know, it's actually kind of funny because when I came back at him and let him know some of the other things that were going on with it, you know, now mysteriously he's silent, of course. You know, he's not going to say anything. You know, they don't want to know about the Saudi, you know, that they got out of the country. That, you know, and it's really going around mainstream media now that Michelle Obama visited the guy in the hospital. And nobody wants to talk about this. But, you know, it's gotten back to this, there was an article on Bloomberg about the failure, the reason that the bombing happened was because it was another failure of security. The agencies weren't talking to each other. And I put out a tweet saying that, well, if that's the case, then what the hell did we have 9/11 for in the Department of Homeland Security? Isn't that supposed to be fixed? And all these things, you know, at the airport, you're grabbing your junk and everything else, they're supposed to be making us safer. So these kinds of things don't happen, and they're supposed to be monitoring different things, right? So what's next? That means either the tyranny that's already been put in place hasn't worked and it's got to increase, or, you know, basically somewhere there's a lie in there, and that's the kind of thing that's kind of exposing it further.
Yeah, well, they bring it out piece by piece, scare tactic by scare tactic, inch by inch, until eventually you're back completely into a corner in a jail cell and there is no escape. We'll be right back after the break.
Pushing it too far.
We'll be right back. No one's gonna take me alive. The time has come to make things right. You and I must fight for our rights. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment here with my two rather special guests, Baran Hines and Joe Hagman of the Hagman and Hagman Report, which will be starting directly after he comes on the show. And Joe, thank you for giving us a full 2 hours of your time. I really appreciate your insight, man.
Well, thank you for having me. It is, as I said, a pleasure and a very good time coming on the show.
And Baran as well. I have this kind of concern, right, that if we're doing the radio game, that we're becoming targets. And that's what a lot of the listeners think as well, that if as soon as they start a radio show, they'll become a target for the New World Order and what have you, and all of that kind of stuff. Have you actually had any intervention in your life as a result of your activities on radio? Because I haven't.
Actually, I have, and you know, I really don't even actually want to talk about it much. But it's it's not a fake thing. I'll say that much. I don't know that the I don't know that that's something that should deter people. And the only without going too deep into it, you know, just looking at the traffic that I've had to my site specifically, I've had the entire alphabet soup literally visit my website. You know, the entire known alphabet soup for, you know, the U.S. government. And, you know, I've seen a lot of foreign agencies, you know, come there. I've seen virtually every, you know, big bank that you can think of, you know, beyond even the mega banks. I've had, you know, you think of a commercial bank, I've had visits from those sites. And when I say that, I'm talking about people that, that are, you know, viewing it from the, you know, from that particular network. Just so that's showing up in my web traffic. But, it, you know, beyond that, anyway, you know, it's the surveillance of what's going on, I do believe is real. And you know, to the large extent that people are portraying it to be, because, you know, they are scanning constantly across all networks, you know, that, you know, just, it, you know, nothing else the computer systems are doing because of this internet aggregation. You know, that's the, that's, you know, some people are talking about that's one of the ways that Petraeus got caught up in the whole situation with Broadwell. You know, even I'm positive that there's more to that. You know, sometimes it takes just a nudge, you know, to push it in the right direction of, you know, something that leads to a more public, you know, uncovering. But beyond that, the system, whether it's people that know why they're surveilling or not, you know, the system is watching and it's picking up, you know, tons of chatter. You know, it's generating data all the time, and the police state is, you know, starting to crack down. You know, you're starting to see that because the chatter is changing. You know, that debate about conspiracy theorists and everything else is, it's reached such a mainstream discussion level that, you know, now it's got everyone talking about it, and guaranteed, you know, it's, you know, even if it's not nefarious, you know, from some of these departments of people that are doing it, you know, it's information, you know, because, you know, Facebook and Twitter are the largest data mining tools out there, obviously, so people are leaving such great bits of information out there, you know, not just about what they think, but about their personality and how they react to negative news. You know, all these things can be pulled together into one file, you know, and, you know, you could scan someone's Facebook account and get pretty much a complete psychological profile of them, you know, things that they don't even know about themselves. And, you know, I think that's the danger, is that we don't know exactly what is out there and exactly what's happening. Because, you know, if you look at the situation that's going on with Facebook with all the censorship has increased dramatically. You know, there's a guy, Storm Clouds Gathering, is his channel on YouTube. He puts out these great videos that a lot of people have seen. And he had made a new video about the I believe it was CISPA. And when he put it out, he had made the video and went to upload it to his, he went to share the link from YouTube to his Facebook page about 20 minutes after it had been uploaded. So you figured it had been uploaded for 20 minutes, and then he went to share it, you know, for the first time on his page, and they had blocked the link. Initially, they gave him this box that said some kind of security warning that link had been marked as abusive. So how the hell could it be marked as abusive if it didn't get up, if it didn't get shared, you know, but that first time?
Hmm.
Yeah, and the video was about 5 minutes long. So, you know, in that 20 minutes time, you know, who saw that and made that decision? Or was his channel already flagged? Because many people, whether it's, you know, the quote-unquote fringe edge, with people that are, you know, kind of believing things that aren't necessarily true or peddling information that's not necessarily true, all the way back into the more rational end, everyone's being monitored and limited and squeezed. You know, me, for example, I'm on a 30-day friend ban where I can't add friends, I cannot message people that I don't know. For the article that I shared was an article about Facebook taking down a like page that had 500,000 likes. They took it down with no warning, basically saying that, you know, somebody had marked some of this stuff as abusive or spam, and they had temporarily taken it offline while they figured out the whatever punishment he was going to be doled out. And it ended up being, you know, some kind of 7-day limitation. You know, they have different levels, 24, 48 hours, 7 days, and then 30 days. You know, so, you know, depending upon what kind of, you know, points you've racked up with Facebook, the censorship seems to change. And, you know, for them to just take down a page with 500,000 likes, and this wasn't even offensive content. It was more, it was New World Order aware content, but it was newer age things, you know, more dealing with meditation and things like that. So it's not necessarily some of the more extreme things that they were discussing, but this one page was, you know, very popular and had very positive, you know, things coming out of it, actual self-help tips almost, you know, for this, for dealing with this kind of information. And they, you know, they took that page down for, with no warning, and didn't even give them a reason even after putting the page back up, but giving them the 7-day spam warning period.
Yeah, yeah. And Joe, I also wanted to get your perspective on this as well, because there's also another vein around there, a discussion in the truth movement, that anybody who achieves any figure of success is obviously an insider COINTELPRO.
Yes, because if you are telling the truth on the radio, you will either be instantly killed or you're not real. There's talk of that. But as far as this coming into personal lives and being threats, people threatening, I've seen that, not to the extent where it's been in my face, but lots of letters and emails and phone calls. And I live by this policy. I keep my gun close and my Bible closer. And I feel like I'm safe. And, you know, whatever's going to happen to me is going to happen to me. If they want to do bad enough, they can do whatever they want to do. But I'm going to try my hardest to stay alive and continue doing what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, it's when you stick your flag out, when you say, this is who I am, this is what I'm doing, and you do it in a public forum, two kinds of people come after you. One, the kind of people who instantly, as they come out of the woodwork, identify themselves as your enemies because they're starting to attack you, right? And the other type of people that come out of the woodwork are the people who are there to support you, to care about you, to help you, to defend you. That kind of thing. All you have to do is just declare who you are in an open public forum, and you make many friends and many enemies at the same time. And does it balance itself out? I think it does.
If I can say something to that, you're absolutely right. I've had people from unnamed agencies, I know which agency they're with, you know, but they've talked to me personally and have echoed the same thing, that there is a larger side of people that are awake and do understand what's happening. You know, they're more public about it in different ways, you know, whether it's just between colleagues or, you know, whatever. And it is out there. I've had people contact me in very interesting ways, to say the least.
All right. And the other element is, I want to be attacked at some point. You know, like something decent that could actually just make it real and solidified for me. Because up till now, guys, it's just been, you know, some guy abusing you, saying you've got a gay slur / haircut or whatever. You know, that's not really that scary to me. It's just block, and you never hear from that person again.
So you want a real, in-your-face, you know, shut up or you're going to get it kind of.
Yeah. I want like some real kind of like scary phone call with like dark Scream 4 the movie type background music. You know,
I've had one of those.
This is the government surveillance service.
Yeah, they don't say that.
You have uttered the words conspiracy theorist, and you are now under our thumb.
You know. They never say they're with the government, but I did get one call one time, and the person says, "I'm gonna kill you, and there's nothing you can do about it," and hung up, and that was that. And I think anybody who calls to say that much does not pose a threat anyway. Yeah, if you're gonna call me and tell me that, I don't think that's really your goal. Otherwise, you would not have announced it to me. So
no, there are much more subtle things out there.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like the reason I'm calling you is because I'm too lazy to actually come out and kill you, so I thought I'd just, you know, make a gesture.
Yeah. Make it easier on myself. Hopefully you'll just quit.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Well,
hopefully,
you know, I think it does speak to the effect that is being had by the, you look at the debates become real vigorous after the Boston situation, you know, about the, it reached the same level of kind of this Sandy Hook annoyance much sooner than Sandy Hook did. The information and the quality of the information becoming vetted, you know, the cycle is becoming much quicker, you know, and it's because the number of eyes that are watching and actually seeing what is happening is, I think it is increasing, you know, just what's happened with the Boston bombing. It's reached this point where, like I said, that line is the, either you're a conspiracy theorist or a crazy or a regular guy.
Mm.
Yep.
Well, that is, we've been split right down the middle. And I think basically, we all just need to stick up for each other, you know, quit slamming around the names and disadvantaging everybody else. You know, the infighting, as we mentioned in the first hour, Joe, that's actually the real worst thing. Because if some government agent or some idiotic person comes out and insults you, you know, it's like, yeah, it's not that bad. But when it's from somebody from the inside who you thought was your trusted friend, that's real nasty. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.